matter.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And we just heard from Alicia Mupin, who's the Director of Strategies at Aster DM Healthcare. She gave her insights into what's happening in the healthcare market, what her predictions are, and some insights for anyone who wants to start a business. She's also a bit of an entrepreneur with two brands under her belt. If you missed that, you can catch it on our website at dubaieye1038.com/eyeoncareers. And you can click on the podcasts that are all there. The best part about the show, it's interactive, and you can SMS us at 4001 or use your mobile app to send in any questions that you may have. Currently, we're going to take a little look at the NGO space, the CSR space. You know, we're going to be talking to one of the legends in the region for the NGOs. Her name is Claire Woodcroft Scott. She's the Chief Executive Officer of Emirates Foundation. Let's hear a little bit more about her background.
Claire Woodcroft Scott is the CEO of Emirates Foundation, the national foundation of the UAE, and is responsible for driving its vision of supporting youth development in the country. Claire brings over 20 years of experience working in the field of sustainable development in the Middle East and Africa as a development practitioner, a journalist, and a corporate executive specializing in sustainability, social investment, and reputation management. She was recently named number 6 on the UAE Brits List 2014 by Arabian Business Magazine and recognized with a special award as one of 5 most inspiring Brits of 2014. Prior to joining Emirates Foundation, Claire was Deputy Director of Shell Foundation, working on building social enterprises to help address global development changes. In this role, she worked to build the Lead Africa Fellowship Program, a program that focuses on building leadership skills across the continent. Earlier, Claire worked as the Regional Director of Communications for Royal Dutch Shell in the Middle East and North Africa, managing the oil company's social investment portfolio in the region and addressing issues related to sustainability. Claire also worked in Palestine as a consultant for various development agencies and contributed to several literary studies on the issue of development in a non-sovereign nation. She served as the finance editor of Middle East Economic Survey, an oil and gas journal where she wrote about regional capital markets, the banking sector, project finance, and other aspects of regional economic development. Claire Woodcroft Scott is a fluent Arabic speaker holding a bachelor's degree in Arabic and French from Salford University in the UK and a master's in development from the London School of Economics.
Well, please, Claire, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
It's quite an impressive background you have, and you know, not everybody gets the opportunity or takes the opportunity as you have to make such a difference in the world. It must be very fulfilling work that you do.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. It's great to be able to work in the social sector. I mean, I have also, of course, worked in the private sector, but I think it's wonderful if you can have a contribution to socioeconomic development in more general terms.
Maybe you can just tell for some of our listeners who maybe aren't so familiar with the Emirates Foundation, I mean, what is it really that you do and what's been the impact?
So we are essentially the national foundation of the UAE. We work across the country in all 7 Emirates. And our goal is to really guide, inspire, and empower young people in the UAE. We have a focus on young Emiratis, but we are inclusive, so any young person in the UAE can sign up to our programs. And each program is trying to address a specific challenge facing young people in the UAE. We see that managing the complexities of the 21st century or navigating the complexities of the 21st century is a big challenge for young people these days. Lots of complex choices they have to make that perhaps weren't there in earlier times. So we're really there to help and guide them around their career decisions, their personal development, and how they generally become engaged and productive citizens in the community.
Well, so what's been your most successful program to date?
Well, we have 6 core programs, and I would say that each of them in and of their own right has generated a significant impact. But our most mature program is Takatof in the volunteering space, where we have now over 30,000 young people registered as volunteers working across the UAE and outside of the UAE. But even some of our newer programs, like our financial literacy program, helping young people to be able to manage their personal finances better, we have over 7,000 odd young people that we've engaged with.
Wow, that's amazing. You said you used to work in the private sector. Can you talk a little bit about that transition where at someday you said, this is enough of the rat race for me and moving into the NGO space or doing a bit more meaningful work?
Well, I actually started off in the development space working with multiple NGOs and with the donor community and became very disillusioned with what you can call concessional finance or the third sector, because I didn't think it was achieving enough impact and I found it wasn't as efficient as
what's concessional?
So concessional finance is where it's the opposite of commercial finance, if you like. So that means donor finance or funding for NGOs and funding for developmental projects.
So people give donations.
Well, exactly. But also it's the finance you would get from large multilateral organizations like the World Bank or the UN. And when you work in that space, often you find that the mechanism for delivery is very different to the business sector. In the business sector, people tend to be more focused, look at issues like accountability and value creation. And I became somewhat disillusioned with the developmental sector because I didn't think they were focused enough on real outcomes and real accountability. So where is this money going and how do you know if you've had an impact or not? So actually, I did the opposite of what you're suggesting. I became disillusioned with NGOs and developmental organizations and went to work for the private sector because I thought maybe they would do a better job.
You flipped the other way. Wow, that's amazing.
Absolutely. Okay. And then back.
Okay, and then so what was that like when you flipped? I mean, what was that transition like moving from the NGO space
to
the private sector?
It was, in a way, a real challenge because I had spent from a very early age, I was very interested in development, in socioeconomic development, and I really wanted to be part of a large developmental organization. And then realizing that I wasn't convinced that model was actually the best way to, for example, create jobs or improve education or help countries grow, when I realized that perhaps business was a better mechanism for doing that, that's why I made that shift. And once I was inside the private sector, I realized that indeed businesses play a huge role in helping economies progress and grow. And sometimes they play a more significant role than the traditional developmental community.
So basically, you know, those commercial organizations that have a social footprint, creating huge impact. And, you know, I think you had companies like The Body Shop and Eat Erotic, I mean, maybe not anymore, but when it was originally started, that had that real social commitment, you felt in a way that these organizations may have a bigger impact than some of the other, some of the other NGO organizations.
Absolutely. I think there is a level of accountability when you're a profit-based organization, you're forced to look at value creation. Am I really creating results and outcomes here? And that's not necessarily the case for the third sector. When I was very young, I was one of the big fans of The Body Shop, actually, and probably one of the first users of Body Shop products because I believed in the fact that they didn't test on animals and that they were a responsible business. And now, you know, 10, 20, 30 years later, you're seeing companies endorse that kind of sustainability model, which The Body Shop really pioneered, and in an even much more integrated fashion.
And so do you feel that this is a growing trend that now this is what they call the triple bottom line? You've had some new legal structures set up in Canada and the U.S. where we have B Corps now, or organizations which have a dual in their charter, have a commitment to making the community better as well as create value for shareholders. Is this a growing trend, something we're going to see in the future?
I think it's an absolute inevitability. I think if commercial organizations think they can operate without taking consideration of their entire stakeholder base and not just looking at their immediate customers and their shareholders, they're not going to survive in the 21st century. I think many companies now are realizing that they need to look at profit, look at are you generating value, are you creating a monetary output at the end, but also look at how are you impacting the communities where you work. Because if you don't, it will come back and bite you.
Well, I think it seems like a no-brainer, though, because you increase engagement, you're actually increasing your productivity because people are more excited with what they want to do. They're identifying their sense of self with the brand that they work with, which is what happened with The Body Shop. I mean, people loved to be a customer. People loved to work there. People wanted to own the franchise. With doing things like creating cooperative farms, for example, people felt their money was being recycled in positive ways.
Absolutely. So you're seeing there's a consumer drive for this. So yes, it completely makes sense. And that's why I say there's inevitability to it. Companies realize it can also hit their bottom line. It supports your reputation. It can drive, you have a lot of consumers, ethical consumption. You're looking at consumers who want products that are produced ethically. But most companies find also that the more productive and the more ethical you are in your production, you save money. So companies looking at things like waste management and recycling and closed loop production cycles are finding that, you know, waste is a cost. So actually the company benefits, your consumer benefits, your reputation benefits, and the community benefits.
This is a story of Claire Woodcroft-Scott, the Chief Executive Officer of Emirates Foundation, starting off her career in the NGO space and then deciding to join the private sector. She felt that socially responsible private organizations could have a bigger impact in the community. We'll find out why she flipped back to the NGO space again in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. We are here with one of the legendary NGO leaders of the region, Claire Woodcroft-Scott, who's the Chief Executive Officer of the Emirates Foundation. She started life in the NGO space, but then felt that she could have more impact working in the private sector and took the jump. Claire, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
So very unusual. So usually people go from private sector to the NGO, but you went from the NGO to the private sector. What were you doing in the private sector?
So I worked for, first of all, for Visa International, obviously a large multinational, and subsequently for Royal Dutch Shell.
These are like very serious corporations.
So yeah,
like
very,
very
large.
Very like hardcore private sector.
Absolutely. Large listed companies with a large global footprint and very recognizable brands. And that's what excited me about both those opportunities was being able to apply a commercial brand for social good and be able to create social value through a business model. And I think that is possible. And what I liked about the private sector is by definition, when you're beholden to shareholders, you are looking at value creation, it forces you to be efficient in the way you deploy your resources, which is not necessarily the case in the third sector.
So how do you leave? Like most people never leave Shell, right? Like it's like a small country, right? It's got it has the bureaucracy of a country anyway. Anything done, but how did you leave?
Well, I had an amazing opportunity from Shell. After I'd been there a few years, I discovered something called Shell Foundation, and that's what took me back to my roots, because I looked at Shell Foundation. I said, okay, this is not like some of the classic NGO foundation structures. This is a foundation that is applying business principles to creating social value. And this operating a business looks and sounds like a business, has people with a business and private sector mindset, but is creating real measurable impact in the developing world by creating social enterprises, by making sure they're scalable, and really creating jobs, looking at healthcare issues and various others. So I secured a job at Shell Foundation and finally found myself in a space that I thought was the perfect combination of a private sector mentality, commercial mentality, looking at accountability and measurement and value creation. And yet the output was social. So for me, that was a great hybrid.
Okay, so your private sector job led you back into it. I read an interesting quote that said that, you know, if you have a dream that you're trying to find, on the other side of the coin, your dream's also trying to find you. And it almost felt like in that story, that quote just came into my head. You know, on one hand, you know, you want to make this social impact, but also, you know, the cosmos or universe is also helping you and brings you to this hybrid role.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, if I look back at my career, I sometimes in my sort of mid-30s thought, well, maybe, where am I going here? It's not clear. I've gone, you know, from the development sector to the commercial sector. What's the one thing that ties all these different roles together? And it was only really a few years ago that I realized it was sustainability, that actually the one thing that I was really passionate and have always been passionate about is sustainable socioeconomic development. And, of course, that's what my master's degree was in. And suddenly everything fell into place. And I realized realized that what I had been doing in the last 20-odd years of my career was exploring the best way to support and promote sustainable socioeconomic development. And I think there is a role for the third sector. There is a role for the development sector. But increasingly, there's also a huge role for the business sector. And now what we're seeing, of course, with the creation of social enterprises is that there's a role for a hybrid model, and that potentially the most effective way to solve some of the world's most pressing social challenges is by combining business acumen with social expertise and really bringing the two together. And to me, that's the essence of social enterprise, and hence why we now hear so much about the model of social enterprise. It's a response to the failure of the traditional third sector and the failure of business to independently solve some of the world's growing social problems.
And, you know, but when you look at actual business schools, they never promote, they promote, you know, you can have a job as a strategy consultant, you can have a job in private equity, you could have a job in investment banking, but you know, when you're in the business schools, you know, I think they're only now you're seeing the nascent seeds of, hey, you can be a social entrepreneur. I think this is a term of the 21st century even, right? I don't think it was in the 20th century there was such a thing as I'm a social entrepreneur, you know, except maybe in some excluded circles and maybe Bernard Kushner's house, maybe. I don't know where else it would be mentioned. But
no, absolutely. And I think, but you are seeing now many universities look at creating courses around them. My own university, University of Salford in the UK, now has a master's for sort of social business and enterprise. And I think, personally think that even the lexicon around social enterprise will disappear in a few years' time as businesses realize that undertaking responsible operations and ethical operations is simply the only way to do business in this highly connected, transparent world we live in. At that stage, you know, you won't need to talk about social enterprise. You'll be talking about how businesses are responsible and how that helps them not only hit their bottom line, but also create value with their stakeholders and mitigate risks in the community and mitigate what we call, you know, negative externalities. In other words, they will be having a positive impact on the communities they work with. So I think that social enterprise is a bridge for us to get to a kind of a new stage in capitalism, if you like, whereby companies recognize that without taking into consideration the entirety of their stakeholder base, if they only focus on the money part, it will come back and bite them. And you can see that in many examples of where companies have focused purely on commercial output and have ended up having environmental issues, having issues with their communities, media issues, and it hits their share price. So acting responsibly is actually good for business and good for the community.
But I think also on a micro level, from a leadership perspective, creating that level of engagement with your staff, for the leaders themselves, having this kind of value system within the organization breeds engagement, gets people really connected with your brand. And I mean, I think from just a simple leadership perspective, you need to be doing this stuff. And you've seen some of the corporations maybe toying with the concept where they having, you know, the breast cancer walk, or they're having different activities where you can really see the staff being the spearhead of that brand. And I think Procter & Gamble's walk for cancer in the West anyway has been a huge success for them, both in creating impact in the community, but also creating engagement, you know, with your staff. So I also wonder if it's going to be one of the tools or the levers that you look at as what's in the toolkit for someone who's leading a large group like Shell or you know, maybe some of these other multinational brands, which I won't mention, could probably use some of this makeover, right? Because what the stats are now is that the engagement for multinationals of the Fortune 500s is at an all-time low. And then the next 5 years, 35% of Fortune 500 staff will become entrepreneurs because they're so revolted by the value system of Western corporates.
Well, absolutely. We saw when I was at Shell Foundation and even now at Emirates Foundation, we see lots of young people who have their traditional, you know, their MBA or their Harvard degree or whatever, saying, I really want to come and work in the third sector. I want to work in philanthropy, which was not the case 10, 15, 20 years ago, when people with that kind of level of education were much more interested in business, working for an investment bank. So that's shifting. But also, I think if you look at what does sustainability mean for companies, it basically just means managing your non-technical risk. So any any organization will have the technical risks associated with its core business. But then you also have reputational risks. And those reputational risks mean things like, as you said, if your employees become disaffected, if your employees lose trust in your brand, then definitely your customers will. But also if the community that you're working with loses trust in your brand, you are going to have some major non-technical risks, reputational risks. And those can wipe more off your share price than a piece of technical equipment that fails to deliver. And I think that epiphany is what many companies are going through at the moment. Sadly, not enough. You have some companies that really understand that integrated approach to sustainability. I mean, you have people like Nike looking at closed-loop production cycles, albeit Nike had a major problems with its share price years ago because they hadn't factored in communities and they had a big issue with labor rights in Southeast Asia. But when they started to engage in the community, when they started to understand the non-technical risks of their business, then they started to get traction with trust and reputation. And then you get the consumers on your side. But I take your point absolutely that you also need your employees. I mean, if your employees don't buy your brand and they don't trust you, there's no way that anybody further distance from the organization is going to do so.
So, you know, when we look at this now, we say, okay, we want to get involved in the NGO space. We want to have careers in the NGO space. Is it really realistic? I mean, obviously, maybe in Dubai or Abu Dhabi, the UAE, it's probably more realistic than I think in areas like Saudi Arabia, where I think, you know, I don't even know. Do they have legal structures for NGOs in Saudi Arabia or in some of these other countries? I mean, how much of a steep climb do we have here?
I don't think it's even sector specific. So I don't necessarily see young people, and I talk about youth because obviously Emirates Foundation, we are focused on youth. But I don't see young people saying anymore, as they would have when I was studying these things, you know, I want to work for an NGO. I see young people saying, I want to make a positive impact. I want to work for an organization that is responsible. So I think whether you work for an NGO or a private sector organization or a government institution or a foundation, you know, young people and people more generally are increasingly asking the right questions. You know, how did we create this product? How did we source this material? How does this company treat its staff? How does this company or organization treat its suppliers? And with the transparency and accountability that the digital revolution brings us, people want answers to those questions, and people are going to put stuff out there into cyberspace challenging organizations to operate more responsibly. And if they don't, it will come back and hit them. And you can get real traction as a discontented consumer these days simply by your Twitter account. So I think what we're seeing is that young people increasingly wanting to have a positive impact on society and not just focused on salaries and not just focused on their own personal career path, but really looking at the bigger picture.
This is Claire Woodcroft-Scott, the Chief Executive Officer of Emirates Foundation. She's going to be giving us her insights on the NGO space in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are listening to Claire Woodcroft-Scott, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Emirates Foundation. Claire, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you. Great to be here.
For those of you who are just joining us, we started the show with Alicia Mupin, who is the Director of Strategies of Aster DM Healthcare. And she talked about what the future of the healthcare market looks like, where the opportunities are, where the challenges are, and also talk a little bit about starting your own business, because she has two of them as well as running this business. And now we're with Claire Woodcroft-Scott, who started her career in the NGO space, but then felt that private sector companies may be more effective at driving change and driving social change. So she joined the private sector in a very serious way, working for companies like Visa and Shell, and then found her way back into the NGO space, where she sees now the future being maybe somewhat of a hybrid role, where we have social enterprise. And of course, with that comes, the emergence of the social entrepreneur, which we've seen in the 21st century. If you missed any of that, you can catch it on our website, dubaieye1038.com/eyeoncareers. And as well, if you have any questions for Claire, this best part about the show is it's interactive. So you can SMS us at 4001 or use your mobile app to send a message in directly. So you know, Claire, I think the audience is actually, sending in quite a few questions. And one of the, major questions is, how do you start an NGO in the UAE? I mean, many of us come from other countries where, NGOs have been part of the landscape for centuries. Whereas here, it's a new thing, setting up. Dubai's always been entrepreneurial from the get-go, mm-hmm. but the NGO thing is a kind of different animal. How do you go about starting one? Can you start one? Is it challenging? What are the different ways? Can you maybe shed a bit of light on it for those budding social entrepreneurs out there?
Absolutely. So indeed, that is the first point that I would make. So I think increasingly people are moving away from traditional NGO structures, and I think that is a good thing. Traditionally, NGOs haven't perhaps been as efficient or effective as they might have been in creating social value, and hence we're seeing the rise of the social enterprise. So first of all, I would encourage anybody who wants to look at positive social change and be part of that to look at the entrepreneurial space. And also, I would suggest it doesn't necessarily mean that one has to go and set up one's own social enterprise. You might be able to, within your own existing organization, drive a more sustainable or a more responsible, ethical corporate approach. However, if you are entrepreneurial and you really believe that the way to create positive change in society is by establishing a social enterprise, there are various ways of doing it. We at Emirates Foundation are looking at the broad-based regulatory environment for social enterprises. It is very nascent still in the whole region, actually. We talk to our counterparts at the Arab Foundations Forum, which is a network of regional foundations, and we're all working on this collectively. Social enterprise is a new animal. It's not well understood, even in parts of Europe, even in more mature markets. So the first thing is to realize why it is you need a social enterprise. Is the social impact you want to create something you could do inside a traditional corporate structure, or does it require a new one? If it does, if you believe you have a social enterprise idea, here in the UAE, one of the simplest ways to establish it is simply to set up in a free zone. I mean, normally, in other parts of the world, you would want to look at fiscal incentives, given that you're creating social value. But here, of course, you don't have that problem. So here, probably one of the easiest ways is to simply register in one of the free zones as a social enterprise entity. If you do want to set up a more traditional NGO, then you would need to seek registration under the Ministry of Social Affairs. But increasingly, also, there are alternative options at the Dubai Economic Department. So it's also worth talking to them about the exact nature of your business. And it really depends on what kind of activities you want to undertake. But I think there are various options. It's still a work in progress, I think, and many entities here are looking at making it easier to register social enterprises. But I would start by talking to those three entities.
And what about the CDA, the Community Development Authority here in Dubai, which I think is a bit of a free zone for, kind of those nonprofit entities?
Yes, absolutely. So that's another great option. But I mean, we talk a lot about an enabling environment and how important that is. But actually, I think people who want to set up a social enterprise, first of all, need to be really clear on why they're setting it up. What is the social value that you want to create, and how are you doing it? And have you made sure that others are not already doing it in that space? Because SMEs in general, enterprises in general, are quite prone to high failure rates. Creating a social enterprise is even more difficult than creating a regular enterprise, because not only do you need the numbers to add up, but you also need to have measurable social value that you're creating. So I'd really urge young social entrepreneurs to think really carefully about what kind of social enterprise they want to create. Talk to others in this space. You have Social Enterprise Week now in Dubai every year, where you have lots of individuals who have tried and tested models and also who can share experiences of what works and what doesn't. Get a mentor. Join a community. They're out there in the UAE. The UAE has taken a really leading role in social enterprises in the region, and I would strongly recommend that people talk to peers in that space before establishing anything.
A lot of people feel that, when you talk about someone running a charity, or if you are starting up one, and in your budget, in your business plan, if you are basically showing good salaries, you're going to have a general manager who's earning a general manager's salary. Sometimes, especially in pioneering markets, that can be frowned on. And in fact, maybe even in the private sector, when you know they don't like to pay for professionals so much in the pining markets. And I'm not pointing a finger at any company in the country in the GCC. I mean, I think that spills across Africa, South Asia. You know, your salaries are just higher in the mature markets. But do you feel that this is a challenge where, you know, if you want to run a proper charity, you need to run it professionally with branding, with you have so many operational issues to do it right. Is it a challenge to justify the level of professional, the level of salary that you need to people who would be giving donations or who would be granting you that license as well?
Well, you know what, actually, Shane, that's one of the reasons why I joined the third sector and why I left it, is that level of professionalism and why I came back to it now. So what we're seeing now globally is that the third sector, and by that I mean foundations, charities, and NGOs, are realizing that if you don't get the right people, and you don't pay for the right people, and you don't get the right infrastructure, and you don't get the right financial systems and the right marketing, you're not going to create the social impact that you want to create. There are multiple people now doing research in this space. Caroline Fiennes is one of them. She's in the UK, and we've done some work with her at Emirates Foundation, who has done research to show that those charities that invest in their people, that get top talent, that get high level professionals, deliver more social value. Mediocrity is not a good thing in any sector, and particularly when you're trying to create social change. So there is now a growing global campaign to call for boards of trustees and other stakeholders to understand, to move away from this myth that you have to underinvest in overhead. Overhead simply means people. If you want to change things, if you want to create a positive social impact, you need good people, you need professional people, you need well-paid people. And we actually had at the Emirates Foundation Philanthropy Summit just a few weeks back, our opening plenary discussion was called Busting the Overhead Myth. And we had great feedback from the audience, and we had great panelists who all agreed that we need to move beyond the idea that somehow if you're working in the social sector, you should be paid less. The world still faces some huge challenging social problems. We've seen a level of income disparity that came in the beginning of the year with the Oxfam and the World Economic Forum report that is just absolutely phenomenal. If we're going to address some of those social problems, we need the best people, the best talent, the best systems. So I think I'm delighted now to see that the third sector is shifting back towards that kind of approach now and really calling for investment in capacity.
There's this stigma that says, you know, if you're doing humanitarian work, you don't deserve to be rich, you know, or you shouldn't be rich, or you shouldn't be a millionaire if you're out there trying to make a positive impact mm-hmm. in the world. And, you know, shouldn't it be the opposite? Shouldn't you, if anyone deserves to be a millionaire, it's the person who's saving people from starving to death?
Absolutely. It's fundamentally misplaced, fundamentally misplaced. And I would argue, and we would certainly advocate that at Emirates Foundation, that you want the best talent. It's much more complex solving social problems than it is creating commercial value.
But you can't deliver a plan, say, here's my social organization, my social enterprise, invest in us, and in year three, the senior leadership team all becomes millionaires. Now, that's not going to fly. Why is that? Do we need to change the way we think about these organizations? Claire's going to answer that question in just a minute. Again, this is Claire Woodcroft-Scott, the Chief Executive Officer of the Emirates Foundation. We're looking at what it takes to build a world-class NGO in this region. We'll be right back.
Dubai i 103.8, award-winning news, business, sport, and lifestyle coverage. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are here with Claire Woodcroft-Scott, the Chief Executive Officer of Emirates Foundation. Claire, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here, and we're just tackling a bunch of interesting issues. One of the big, you know, zeitgeist shifts that we're going to see is, you know, the role of social work and social activism, both in the government space, in the private sector space, the NGO space, and now what you call social enterprise, and the move that, you know, current hardcore private sector businesses are seeing. This is really something we need to be a part of, to be part of the community, to increase engagement with our staff. to continue, you know, building our brand. You know, the socially active or empathetic organization is the way to go in the future. So a lot of big changes on it. But we were just talking about, you know, you're now building, these organizations are global. You know, we're dealing with global issues. You need global professionals. But at the same time, we're not willing to pay for global professionals, not just in social enterprise, but in other businesses as well. But we'll talk about that. But, you know, is it okay to be running a social organization or a social enterprise and become a millionaire? And, you know, are regulators ready for that? Are governments ready for that? Are investors ready for that?
I think it's a conversation that is only really now starting. I think there are some key individuals who are advocating in this space that we need to fundamentally change our thinking and start to pay for top talent in the third sector. I mentioned Caroline Fiennes. There's Dan Pelota in the US who does great work in this space as well. I think it's a difficult conversation to have with boards, with trustees, and with funders. But the reality is that if you want a high-performing social organization, you need top talent. And it's as simple as that. And you won't get top talent in a competitive market space unless you're willing to pay for it. So I think that's the reality. And I think that's also, again, if you look at what we were talking about earlier, the trend of social enterprise, why you now have this hybrid model, because people are saying, yes, we want to solve social problems. Yes, we want to have social impact. Yes, we want to create social value. But actually, the best way to do that is to apply business principles, to apply the principles of the corporate, the business sector, but to creating social outcomes. So, for example, if I'm running a private sector company, do I want the best IT systems? Of course I do. Do I want the smartest people in the market? Of course I do. Do I want to have some amazingly impressive marketing collateral and communications capability? Of course I do. So take those kind of commitments and those kind of objectives and apply them to solving issues around hunger, environment, education, whatever the social issue is that you're looking at. It's complex. You need the best brains to be able to do that. You need strong outreach. You need an efficient organization. You need to know where your money is going. How much social return are you getting on your investment? So you need to apply the principles of value creation that exist in the private sector to your social organization. Otherwise, the likelihood is you're going to have very little impact. And those social issues will continue to be entrenched and not be resolved. And indeed, that's what we've seen. We've seen the lack of traction on things like the Millennium Development Goals. And we still see a lot of traditional NGOs that are not able to systemically and permanently solve the problems that they're trying to address. And I would argue that one of the best ways of being able to solve some of these problems is by getting the best brains and investing money just as you would in a commercial organization, but in a way that's accountable and that tracks value creation.
And a bit of the paradigm shift that, hey, it's okay to get rich running a humanitarian business.
It's okay to get rich if you're still creating social value at scale. So if I were to invest in a social enterprise and I found that the CEO of that social enterprise had got to a stage where he was making a couple of $1 million, I'm okay with that if he's changing the lives of millions of people in a positive and permanent fashion. If he's doing that, yes, let's reward him accordingly. If this guy has created a model, be it around hunger, poverty, education, rights, whatever it may be, if he's creating social solutions at scale and impacting the lives of millions of people, pay the guy.
And I think that's where microfinance was one of the first ones to do that, to cross that line where, you know, some people were actually getting rich by empowering the bottom of the pyramid.
I think it's not so much about getting rich. It's about paying for top talent. That's the key thing. You want the best talent in the market. And now that we see young people demanding that businesses be more ethical, that they be more responsible, now we see MBA graduates saying, hey, I want to work in philanthropy, not for an investment bank. You have that opportunity to access top talent. So I absolutely don't think it's about whether you can get rich in the social sector or not. It's about, can we secure the best talent to solve some of these social issues? Because they are complex, they are widespread, and it's much harder to create social value than it is commercial value.
You've got to pay for that intellectual horsepower.
Absolutely.
What's your advice to anyone who wants to go and start a social entrepreneur enterprise or become a social entrepreneur?
Know why you're doing it. Know why you're doing it. Why do you want to set up a social enterprise? What is the social problem that you want to address? And what would success look like? So be very clear from the outset. Do your research. What is the social problem you're trying to address? What is the solution? Does it work? Test it in the market before you register your enterprise. And then go at it at scale. And focus, focus, focus. Don't try to solve 10 social issues at one stage. Choose one that is perhaps particularly entrenched. Check your solution works, and then grow your organization as if it were a commercial organization. Be accountable, transparent, cost-effective, and hire the best people.
So, and it's funny, is, you know, when you look at, I think it was Dr. Viktor Frankl in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, when he said, a person with a why can overcome any how. And finding your sense of purpose that energizes you and drives you, you know, whether you're running a social enterprise or doing anything in life, you need to have that why. And the other one that, you know, you obviously articulated was focus. And, you know, you can see someone with a huge intellect, some of the best education, they have no focus, they go nowhere, they create zero impact. So I think these are tenets of, it doesn't matter what you're doing, you know, you need to have a sense of purpose, a sense of identity, and a focus and your sense of direction. But in its essence, this all comes from your sense of identity, doesn't it? And I think that's where people miss the boat, is they don't really have a sense of identity because they're so outwardly focused. They're not actually looking at themselves.
Well, I think we live, and I started our discussions with this, in a complicated world. The 21st century is fabulously connected. The access to information and data that we have can be very overwhelming. We see a lot of young people these days not knowing who they want to be, not knowing where they should be going with their lives, not knowing what their personal and professional development should look and sound like. And indeed, that's part of our core role. So I would say that, you know, we need to spend a lot more time supporting young people, mentoring them, engaging them, talking to them. There's a huge amount of young people on the planet that are becoming increasingly disengaged, disenfranchised. We need to do that. The 21st century is a complicated place. Let's help young people to understand their passion, but also then to be able to apply it and to build an identity and to have a core purpose in life that can help them be a truly effective and productive and engaged member of society.
Well, Claire, we're running out of time, but thank you so much for coming on. I wish we could have more. And we really applaud the work you're doing and being a pioneer in this space. We're all cheering you, and hopefully not just cheering from the sidelines as we all become more involved in social enterprises and social entrepreneurship. Thank you so much for taking the time to share some of your perspective with us.
Thank you, Shane. It's a pleasure, and we look forward to working with you and many more in the UAE.
Thank you so much. That was Claire Woodcroft-Scott, the Chief Executive Officer of Emirates Foundation. If you missed any of that, you can catch it on the website at you can catch it on the website at dubaii1038.com/ Eye on Careers, and listen to the podcast. This is your host, Shane Phillips, hoping the rest of your life